Welcome to episode 23 of A Legitimate Salvage, your episode-to-episode guide to The Expanse on Amazon Prime.
I'm Warren Fry.
And I'm Jen Burt. And we are without Chip and Katie this week, so we are going to just forge on without them.
Yep. One of them's having a good time and the other one is not.
Exactly. This is a podcast about Star Trek Picard, right?
Well, it probably will end up that way at some point. Yes.
Now is our chance to make all of the Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica references.
Oh, yeah. I don't think either of them would object. I think Chip would just try to throw shoehorn in his Babylon 5 stuff.
Yes.
We're interjecting. He's shoehorning.
Yes, exactly. Oh. But we're like in the middle of this season 4 here.
Yeah. I watched all of this, I think it's getting up on a month ago. And so I actually went back about an hour ago and watched this again because I'm like, I'm going to mix everything up if I don't watch this again. And so at the start, which I'll get into in a second here, I was like, am I way behind? but it was because it was a flashback. So why don't I start with that?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes.
Here's the synopsis. We open on a flashback to Lucia and other belters setting charges to destroy the landing pad, but the RCE ship arrives early. In the present, Lucia wakes up on the Rossi, where she initially seems to be recovering, but then starts bleeding out in her quarter. For a moment, it's Space ER as Alex and Naomi stop the bleeding despite Lucia being suicidal. Later, Naomi shares her story of the OPA violence she was part of with Enaros and encourages Lucia to see a path forward. On Illus, Holden strides into the lockdown camp, yelling for Amos. He is quickly followed by Murtry, who Holden tells the artifacts on the planet are waking up. Murtry agrees to help evacuate, but then makes a quick private phone call to his ship in orbit, asking them to turn one of the shuttles into a bomb. Holden attempts to convince the belters to evacuate, but soon they are taking RCE soldiers hostage and broadcasting a communique back home. On Earth, Avar Sarala is told to be more approachable during debate prep, advice she isn't interested in taking. Her campaign strategy seems to be, I saved Earth, Gao jumped the line to gain a position, vote for me. Christian's attempt to discredit Gao seemed to backfire, but a security situation cuts the debate short. A ship that claims to be disabled with children on board is heading for its early warning defense system, except the ship's drive signature matches the Sojourner's drive. Avar Sarala orders its destruction. Naomi encourages Holden to tell the Belters the truth and, quote, be you, unquote. With the different factions yelling at each other, Holden tells them he knows about the strange activity on the planet because he's in touch with his ghost friend Miller. All factions seem united in thinking Holden is crazy. As the episode ends, it looks like Holden's attempts might not matter. Alex checks the Rossi sensor and sees a massive volcanic explosion, and then we cut to credits.
Oh, man. So
yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, and like, so with this episode, we don't see Mars. We don't see anything that's happening with Drummer and Ashford and anything up there. It's pretty much just Illus, including the Rossi in orbit, and the debates on Earth.
Yeah, not much really. There's not a whole lot of Earth. Prep for debate. It's definitely a B plot, and maybe even there's only an A B plot, it should be the C plot. It's that small.
Yeah.
Although it's kind of consequential because it puts Avar Sarala on the back foot, which is I think this is the first time that happens to her.
Yeah, maybe we should just talk about the Earth plot line really quickly, and then we can move into all the different things that happen.
I have your notes here, and they say terrible campaigner ? And I think it's terrible campaigner period, maybe exclamation point. She is not great at campaigning. She's great at taking charge and getting things done, but actually trying to convince people until after the fact and it's finished, she doesn't seem so great at.
Yeah, she she's both bad at on the debate stage. She really seems to get. She's just. I'm a competent leader. Vote for me. But then she's also surprised by Gao's, revelation that all of her alternates for when she got her spot that got her off basic work for her, which just seems like basic campaign research.
Reverse oppo research, yeah.
Like
she knows, okay, they're going to try and nail me on this, so I'm going to get them with that. Like, that seemed pretty on brand to me. A good politician would do that.
Yeah. Oh, man. And, I get that she is, we have these things happening out in the universe that are fundamentally changing humanity. But she's also, the fact that she's just I don't care about food rations or all these things.
During the rehearsal where she's getting mad and goes straight for the booze, I'm like, Christian, you might have a problem. Wow.
Yeah. I do love, in some ways, that she, when she's told to be like approachable and like, what is it, a caring matriarch or something.
Mm-hmm. And she just goes caring matriarch and drops an F-bomb, which it couldn't get more in character than that.
Yeah. I love it. And I love it because on the level of like, I feel like this is, you know, what happens to women politicians all the time. And I love watching her swear.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I don't know. I haven't watched, I've watched the next episode, but I haven't watched any further than that. I'm just like, mm-hmm. ooh, this can't, I don't, this just does not seem like, she needs to be surrounded by some more advisors, maybe.
And not just her husband, who's kind of a, I mean, I like the guy. He seems like a charming doormat, but a doormat nonetheless, so.
Yeah, yeah. He's mostly there to be her cheerleader, which everyone needs, but.
Mm-hmm. And he's good at that. He's actually great at that. But,
yeah.
But then she doesn't need a cheerleader here. He needs some tough love, which she may or may not get sooner down the line. I'm not going to say.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it seems like this very much feels like a plotline that's setting up things later. Mm.
This whole episode seems like a lot of we're getting things. It's definitely a middle episode. You know what I mean? Like it is a middle episode to begin with, but just watching, you're like, okay, nothing is actually getting resolved here. Just a bunch of stuff's getting complicated here.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you have the, getting pulled out of the debate, and then she has whatever the ship being destroyed, obviously it's going to become more complicated.
And the thing is, they saved money on effects or whatever by doing this, by not showing it. And it's good in a way, but four or so episodes down the road, they mention this again, and I'd forgot it happened because you only really see her watching her desktop. It's like watching me watch somebody else play a video game, and they go, "Remember when that guy did that thing in that video game?" Well, no, it was like secondhand.
Yeah, I think if I wasn't watching this episode for this podcast, it feels like a scene that I maybe would have forgotten very quickly.
Yeah, and I did. But I did also rush through three or four episodes at once. Like I kind of binged the back half of this thing. So that's also on me. Maybe I would have remembered it better if I'd given it some time.
Yeah. It feels like in some ways a very cliche, like plot line of there's maybe they say there's children on board. Don't shoot us. Feels like it's been done a million times.
True. On the other hand, we have her, and what if there were children on board? We don't even know at that point.
Oh, right? Yeah. So, they could be.
We all suspect otherwise, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's the thing. I'm, like, very skeptical about this, but maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, but who knows? Like, and if that's the case, then she's in big trouble.
Yeah. I mean, it's clear that she's definitely something's going on, but I don't. I don't know. Yeah. I honestly was like, when I was watching it, I was like, I know there's something. I had a gap between watching this and watching the previous episodes, and I just couldn't remember. I was like, I know this had something to do with the OPA and all of the stuff that's happening with Inaros and Drummer and all, but I couldn't remember exactly.
And I'm sure we also see none of it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
During the debate, they sort of talk about the way the system is broken, and it's interesting that this isn't a post-capitalist system because what's-his-name is a billionaire many times over, Jules Pierre Miao, and a few other people are. And there's definitely a gap between rich and poor. But at the same time, there's like this basic income thing that you don't have on Mars and you do have on Earth, and it doesn't work from what you can tell in this debate because all these people are just unemployed but have the basics. You know what I mean? And it doesn't seem to it seems to validate, in a way, every armchair libertarian's argument that, well, you just give people everything and they won't do anything. And I'm like, I've never bought that, but this show seems to be kind of saying that.
Yeah. The political nerd in me wants to know much more about this system.
Because yeah, exactly.
I'm interested in the concept of basic income, but like when she talks about like 1 in 6,000 or some number like that get off of basic, and it seems like there are people who want to be doing something other than being given like, you know, this money.
Not to get too political and Canadian, but I was having actually a debate with a friend of mine that I work with who we were talking about how it goes all into the differences between the American and the Canadian system of medicine. But I was saying that the reason this guy was saying, well, people just try to take advantage of the system. I'm like, you can't take advantage of the system if everybody gets this exact same treatment.
Yeah.
So, like, there's no advantage to take. Like, it's just you can't siphon off stuff. Well, people are, you know, who don't deserve it. I'm like, well, that's a judgment call. That's not how this works. But this kind of sounds like that. It's like, yeah. It's like it sounds like everybody gets the same treatment except not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we've seen already Bobby's running around and people are like homeless, essentially. Homeless, yeah. But with access to food, I guess.
Yeah, and whatever Amos's backstory is, he clearly didn't benefit from the system. So, yeah. Oh, I'm sure there's like way more in the books or something that...
Yeah, exactly. And I don't mean to go too far with the whole Canadian...
No, I feel like I work with a lot of people who are on a disability, and I could go on and on about my feelings on this, but...
We're not perfect, we Canadians. Yes. I'll just say sorry preemptively. So...
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, well, yeah, but that's what it made me think of.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
And how does this system work or not work? And you know what? Maybe the books will prove me wrong, but I'm not sure that the writers have put any more thought into we have. It's like, well, it just doesn't work. Why? Look over there.
yeah. I think it's interesting, too, because I think a lot of the show... I don't know. Katie always is very into this idea of the show being hope punk and believing that like people are good and like communities try to work together to survive. And then the idea that like this basic income just seems like is not maybe bringing out the best in people seems a little bit of a into the system.
On the surface, it sounds like it would, right? Or at least it would be good. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
But I guess then you also need to contrast with Mars, and Mars is like very libertarian, right? So, and militaristic. Yeah. So, in order to make it not just two of the same systems, if you count the OPA.
I guess this is the thing about creating a science fiction world that's like some level of political allegory.
You have to have actual... You can't just have things be the same, like they're kind of looking here.
yeah. Because that is the thing with Mars, is that for the most part, until it seems to be falling apart this season, they do seem like everyone kind of has some sort of role, despite it being... militaristic.
Yeah, even to take the political nonsense even further, it's like in the 30s when the Depression was happening, but there was no depression in the Soviet Union, and a lot of people in the U.S. were saying, well, maybe they have a better system than we do, and even FDR, a dyed-in-the-wool, you know, politician, decided to use a whole bunch of socialist programs to get people back to work again, which, in the case of him, worked, and in the case of the Soviet Union, eventually didn't. So it's just as confusing in real life.
All right. We could talk about this forever. I could go down a rabbit hole of my grandfather working, like, clearing trees during the 30s. But
I know you came here for space and not agitprop.
This is what happens when Chip and Katie aren't here, I guess.
You do rein us in.
We could probably continue talking about this debate storyline forever, but should we talk about... We have terrible campaigner Avasarala, and I wrote in the notes, James Holden, terrible mediator.
He is a really terrible mediator. The thing about James is weird is, like, he comes across as, like, everybody is, how do I put this non-crudely, measuring things on this planet, male or female. And he seems like the kinder, gentler version of that, but he's still measuring pretty hard, just like the rest of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, he seems very torn between both, like, being in this kind of pissing match with Murtry and also wanting to, you know, save all these people. And, you know, I get that he doesn't want to reveal, like, oh man, I'm jumping ahead to the end of the episode, but the fact that he's just like, how do I convey this information and why people should believe me? I just have visions, and that's why.
I mean, I barely, like, believe him, and I've seen it.
So. Yeah, and all he has is, like, Amos being like, nope, he's been right. Which is, like, Amos is your credibility.
Well, Amos says so.
Yeah.
He's a big dude. We should probably listen to him.
Yeah. Like, man. I mean,
they haven't started killing each other yet, so is he that bad a moderator?
I guess
he's kept them from murdering each other.
Yeah, I guess it's just, like, what... At this point, when he starts that conversation, his... goal is just like, let's, you know, not kill each other. We have a hostage situation. And we should probably get off this planet soon. And over the course of the conversation, it becomes, we should get off this planet pretty cool. I mean, with the volcano or whatever Alex is seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like it's gonna, yeah, I've watched ahead, but you know, things are heating up. This planet is, there's a part where Okoye confronts Holden and it's like, why don't you just keep saying everything is complicated? And then she lists all the things that have happened since they've shown up. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, bugs, weird alien artifacts, lightning. Like, this planet is crazy.
She has every right to be mad, too. Like, Holden just only tells her enough. And it's like, she's not a stupid person. She can tell you're holding back here. Like, she's your best chance to an ally. So why don't you just tell her everything?
Yeah, it feels like maybe the approach that he should have maybe taken was she's obviously a scientist. I think she says something when he's talking to the whole camp about, she's like, how do we verify that? But there mm-hmm. had to have been a way to maybe get a couple allies on his side like her before he just starts yelling in front of everyone.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be Holden if he didn't car crash his way into stuff.
Exactly. It's like Naomi literally tells him, just be yourself or something like that. And it's like, ooh.
maybe 10%. It's like, are you supposed to be 10% more yourself on the radio or on TV? Maybe 10% less of yourself.
Yeah. Like, from a political point, I like that she's saying, like, you need to treat these people. You need to give these people the information to make their own decisions, whatever they're going to do with that. But
mm-hmm.
the way he took that, maybe, I don't know.
Just as a side thing, the Belter he's talking to, the woman who seems to be kind of in charge of the Belters, or
oh, yeah.
speaking for them, screams Canadian. We can tell our own. And I'm just like, she's got to be Canadian. I mean, I don't know for a fact, but it's a good safe bet since they're filming in Toronto, and she's like sort of not a bit player, but like a, you know, I guess a below the line player, that she probably is from Toronto and Canadian. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I must have seen her somewhere else in a Canadian thing, because this just totally, she sounds Canadian and Belter at the same time, which is very weird.
Yeah, there's a Canadian part of the belt, I guess, you know? Mm-hmm. That's the thing about all of their accents.
Exactly. That's our contribution to this fine culture. Because the most extras are the Belters, right? So,
yeah. Since you're bringing her up, like, I kind of am often frustrated that she doesn't really get a real character, necessarily. She's pretty one-note to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is kind of one note. She's, if I had to pick my favorite, she would not be at the top of the list. It's not bad or anything. She's just kind of there.
I had to I was looking her up for the show notes and I was like, what? I don't even know her name. Like, it'd be, I don't know.
No, I don't either.
I
want to say matriarch, but that sounds dumb. That's just me assuming things that probably aren't right.
Yeah, but that does kind of feel like she's like, well, a lot of the lines she gets are very much like Belter propaganda, mm-hmm. which is, you know, the show has a lot going on, but I wonder what it would be like if, you know, Holden's conversation with her, which she's basically, and she's not wrong in some ways. She's like, mm-hmm. we've been pushed around. We have nowhere else to go. This is our only hope. But
I mean, if I was from the Belt, I'd want to do the same thing. Like, what's your choice here? Crushing poverty while you mine for rich people, or you're at least your own staking your own claim? I mean, that's why all the bad things that happened, a lot of Europeans came to North America, right? So,
yeah, oh yeah, yeah. It's like her, you know. She says something about like, well, is there going to be another planet with all of these like lithium deposits? She's like, we finally found something that could give us some kind of leg up.
Which, again, gets into the whole colonialism thing, although there's apparently nobody other than a bunch of space mountains to take this planet from. But it still kind of gets into the issues of it. Like when I said the thing about the Europeans, I'm like, yeah, but there's that whole other side of it. Yes, they got out of oppression in Europe, but they also oppressed other people. So, and that's kind of, it's not quite the same situation here, but there's reflections of it, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it the fact that was originally an inhabitant of this planet seems to, at this point, have been gone for millennia or whatever, does simplify a little bit the narrative.
I say it's fair game at that point.
But yeah, exactly.
But still the same issues come up, right? Because you've got these competing factions anyway, so.
Yeah, yeah. And you do have, you know, the Belters being you know, coming from a place where they have no real control over their territory, or they're gaining a tiny bit, to being like, well, we finally found something.
Maybe kind of a better example is how when people who got houses dangling in front of them during the housing crisis for ridiculously easy, that they were never going to get again, you know, mortgages, took them, right? Because of course you would. I've had this argument with a friend of mine who's an economist. He's like, well, they shouldn't have. I'm like, well, put yourself in that situation. You're never going to get a house. All of a sudden you have a chance to do it. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And maybe you're not going to think that far ahead about it or look at the macroeconomics of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's... Yeah. They're really... They're in a tough spot, these builders.
Well, and I can just tell you, it doesn't get better.
I could imagine that.
There's a lot of man versus nature coming up, so just to give you a very vague spoiler.
Yeah. Yeah, no. It definitely feels like this episode is the politics and then the weird proto-molecule or whatever weird planet things are going to get more ramped up.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the getting all the conflict in first so then they can react to whatever the other crazy nonsense on the way is.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was thinking, they don't... Yeah, they think he's crazy. Holden's crazy. Do they think he's crazy enough? because if somebody told me that a ghost man told me that this, that, and everything about protomolecules, I'd be like, whatever, sir. You have space madness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's one of those things where, like, it sounds crazy, but how many crazy things have they seen, I guess?
That's true, too, yeah. I mean, they did see Eros, or not Eros, the... Yeah, no, Eros almost fly into Venus and then take off out of its way or into the sun. Yeah. I can't remember exactly how it worked out, but yeah. Like, stuff that shouldn't have happened. Physics was defied.
Yeah.
They also have gone through a ring that goes to another galaxy. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah. And I guess it's like one of those things of like, do you see these things directly like the Rossi crew has seen, or are these people mostly seeing things? But then, yeah, they go through the ring. Like,
Which is just weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And also, I guess Holden's got like a three-season or however many years this is in the show record of seeing crazy nonsense that turns out to be true. So, I mean,
yeah.
I guess that would give you the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Well, it's also one of those things of like, what is Holden's level of like celebrity and how does that help or hurt him?
That's true. Like, is celebrity the same thing in the future? Like, this is, I think, season three, but there's a lot of instances where they show Belters watching people doing crazy, like they're basically vloggers doing crazy space loops around Jupiter and whatever, just stunt drivers, essentially.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe that's what the future, like people who just do stuff, like reality TV, essentially. And there was a documentary about them, too, I guess.
Mm, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so did they ever release the documentary?
Yeah, does that ever go on the air? Like, we see what's-her-name reporting on what's happening in the ring, but is that... That must be before the end of that documentary has ever come out because her cameraman's dead.
Yeah.
Right? And is that part of the documentary? That the cameraman died?
Yeah.
And how he died?
She seems like the kind of person that would edit whatever footage she had into something.
Yeah, she's not a good journalist at all.
Yeah.
That made me feel, as a journalist, I felt quite icky watching her do her, it's even down to the whole, actually both sets of them propositioning people on the Rossi. I'm like, that's not how it's done, guys. That's not cool.
Yeah. Like, that was... Not my favorite storyline.
I mean, it's fun titillation for the audience, but just as a journalist, I was like, you get fired for that, or you should be fired for that.
So we do see with Holden's attempts to like kind of negotiate, he does have a moment with Mercury where he's like, all right, I just want to get these people off the planet. And Mercury kind of agrees, but then maybe also is like, turn a shuttle into a bomb. But he's also making some points about, like, what... I don't know. They're trying to talk about, like, well, he did lose all of these people, and this is why he is justifying the murders that he has. But he is at least making an attempt to maybe evacuate them, it seems.
And he goes from kind of up to this point, he's been full hard ass, and now he's a little less hard ass than he used to be. Like, he's, like, actually kind of being reasonable to a point. But you're also, like... Why are you being reasonable, Mercury? What's your game, sir?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, they take these people, these RCE soldiers hostage. And, like, he doesn't instantly shoot people in the head, which for most people, would not seem reasonable, but for Murtry,
seems relatively calm. Yeah.
Yes. So, I don't know.
And to be fair to him, like you see the Belters setting up that the thing in the flashback at the beginning.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lucia's reasonable, doesn't want to kill anybody, but the other ones aren't.
Like, oh, yeah.
They're just out for blood. So, I mean, yeah, not that he should be acting the way he is, but he doesn't have an adversary here. It's not like he's just picking on people.
Yeah. I think that having that flashback does kind of show the, like, ways mm-hmm. that political violence can kind of go... You make a plan, right? And these, you know, mm-hmm. Lucia's making one plan, and then whatever. The guy who I don't remember his name, but I know from the Canadian show Lost Girl. He was on for many years as a werewolf.
But that's no surprise there.
Yes, but I don't know what his character's name is, and you know,
is that the guy with the bad beard? In the beginning.
He's the guy that has the face tattoos, and he has now a beard, and like. Is the one who like knocks her out. It's like, no, we're doing this. Mm-hmm. I don't know what his name is. I just keep thinking him as his character in that show. But you do see like they have this political violence that she thinks they're just doing, I guess, property destruction, right? Of like they're going to mm-hmm. destroy this landing pad, and everyone else is like, nah. Or we could murder a bunch of people.
And at that point, that ship is coming down, and they're just there to, well, they're probably there to be oppressive, but they're not there to be, you know, to they're not out for blood yet.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. In fact, these guys did start it. I mean.
Yeah. And
who knows
and,
where it would have gone otherwise, but.
Yeah. So, you do, in this episode, kind of get a little bit more of Murtry. All right. You did show up and instantly have your ship blown. It reminds mm-hmm. us where we started, I guess, at the beginning of the season.
Exactly, yeah.
And
which is good.
I'm still not, you know, you probably shouldn't, you know, you have Holden here being like, you're going to face a court trial or whatever for murder, mm-hmm. which, I don't know, it doesn't seem like, what are you talking about, Holden?
You're not anywhere near Earth. You're literally as far from Earth as you can get.
Like, so. What? I mean, that's the thing about whatever. Colonialism or settling is like, what even whose laws are really, I guess it's Earth because they seem to have the most like military presence and mm-hmm. some political presence, but whose laws are even like being enacted here? Yeah, what like
maybe a better analogy than say North America, where you had people who settled here and then started a government of their own there is maybe something like Belgium, where Belgium just came in and said to the Congo, it's our rules, no matter what, you know, who cares?
Yeah.
it's not even somebody, it's a country that's completely removed from the place. Or you get people who go over there at the behest of, let's say, the British government or whatever, and they go haywire on their own, right? So there's all sorts of, there's a lot more leeway that leads to bad things, I guess, is what I'm trying mm-hmm. to say. In either case, but in this case, it's also one step removed because the actual legitimacy is back on Earth, right? As opposed to at least in a local government or something.
Yeah.
Where you could at least call people on their nonsense.
Yeah.
Here you can't even do that, right?
No, there's no like Earth governor that's being sent here. It's, you know. Essentially a small military force and a small science force.
And I have to qualify what I'm saying here. I'm a white dude who lives in Canada, so I'm as guilty of this as anybody else, or at least my ancestors are, you know, more or less. So take all that what I'm saying with a grain of salt here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have, you know, descendants who were like some of the original white settlers of Nantucket. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they, you know...
Yeah. my grandparents either came, I think my great-grandparents are from England, and my grandparents on my dad's side came from Russia and Germany, but they're still white people, so they still had a leg up. So, you know, so I'm not the most qualified guy to discuss colonization by any means.
Yeah. I have many articles that I feel like Karagi has tweeted or whatever to talk about, you know, as a Indigenous person, her role on the show, and I don't know. I need to seek out more of that stuff because
mm-hmm. yeah, I think, me too.
Like, yeah, I'm very curious what people who are not like us have to say about these things.
Yeah, because they would probably have a way different and probably more interesting look at it than I would. Like, yes. I'm looking at it through the lens of a sci-fi show more than anything else, really, which I am allowed to do because I have the privilege of doing that.
So exactly.
Somebody else would probably have a different take on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. I think we have all this stuff happening on Illis. Mm-hmm. And then Lucia is, you know, she is the person that is, you know, being colonized.
True,
and
yes.
So we let's go back up to the Rossi here and talk about, like, what's going on with her and Naomi and Alice. Because that's really the only other storyline, essentially,
yeah,
that
that's
we have.
True. Yeah, but it also does set up things for going forward for Naomi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of more than it does anything for Lucia, to be honest with you. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that scene with after, you know, Alex and Naomi have saved Lucia from, like, you know, bleeding out everywhere, or and Naomi really, she shares the most that you've ever really totally heard. Mm-hmm. Of what she truly did when she was, like, an active member of the OPA.
Yeah, not even Holden knows that story, we assume.
Yeah. Like, I can't remember the exact number, but it's, like, a lot of people that she was responsible for murdering, even if it wasn't, like, part of her original plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, because it just kind of stops the action all of a sudden, and you get this big confession.
Yeah, yeah. As part of it, it's interesting because it's like partly she's showing Lucia, like, oh, there's a way to, mm-hmm. you know, redemption or happiness, or, you know, not feeling hopeless, I guess. But also she's just revealing, like, how dark of a place she's come from.
And, like, maybe I'm way off here, but does Lucia strike you as, like, somebody who's like, depressed generally, or it's just she's gone through a lot of bad stuff, or both?
Oh, no. She definitely strikes me as someone who is depressed generally, because she says something to Naomi, and I don't remember exactly what she says, but she's just like, I don't remember when I was happy. Like, I haven't
okay,
had...
Okay, yeah, fair.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She kind of says something, yeah, of, like, you know, this, you know, being part of this violence and, you know, her husband being pretty angry with her about that, and she can't find her daughter. Like, the immediate things that she's going through are definitely exacerbating, I think, maybe some underlying mental health, or just, like, mm-hmm. you know, wow, it sucks to be a Belter.
Well, also, like, there's a whole thing about Watchmen. People asked Alan Moore about Watchmen, and like, what was he trying to say? And he's like, well, for one thing, I was trying to say that in order for somebody who's going to get dressed up in a costume and beat people up has got to be a little extreme in their views to begin with. And yeah. So, like, I'm kind of the opinion, well, you're either desperate and so under stress, or have pretty, you know, you have at least have the gumption, I guess, or like the drive to go off and do this thing that nobody else is doing. So that probably attracts extreme personalities, right? So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like,
which is both good and bad. Get stuff done, but also means, you know, it's like, I'm trying to think of the historical figure, Abraham Lincoln, like, guy who pulled off amazing stuff, but it was also, yeah, also very depressed, right? So.
Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah.
It's interesting. We might be reading way too much into this. But...
No. I was ready to go off on a tangent about Lincoln, and I had to stop myself.
Okay.
Because he's, yeah, fascinating. Because you're bringing up, like, what does it take for Lucia to go to that extreme?
Or any of them, for that matter.
But yeah, right? Then it is coupled with Naomi. You know, I feel like my read on her is, like, she's often one of the most, like, reasoned, rational people out of this whole crew, or even just, like, on the show.
And I'd say most gentle, too. Her and Amos are kind of tied on that one, you know, in terms of, let's not go for the big, dumb, punchy option.
Yeah. So it's just like, why? So to know that she was at that kind of extreme at some point where she killed hundreds of people, even if, it, you know, she maybe wasn't, you know, you get into this, like, you know, she talks about, well, I knew the kind of man I was getting. I wasn't able to see the kind of man I was getting involved with. But she was definitely, she wasn't trying to kill people, definitely involved in some extreme, you know, guerrilla actions. So for her to be where she is now, it does really reveal how much she's, where she's come from, I think.
Yeah, I think that's as good an explanation as I'd come up with. Yeah. Probably better, frankly.
You know, and then we have Alex, who, I don't know, looks like he's auditioning for ER here. It's like...
He totally does, actually.
I was just like, usually all the medicine in this show is just so like, well, we put him in the auto dock and it's fine.
I mean, I'd be cool with that.
Sounds
like you could just have one at home.
Yeah, it seems great. So it's just to watch him try to, like, whatever, suction her internal bleeding out. I don't, you know, this is why I don't watch medical
shows.
When
I was thinking that, I'm like, so in the future, everybody just calls up YouTube videos and figures out how to perform surgery, which somebody has done, I'm sure, at some point.
I'm sure.
It has to have happened.
Yeah.
Probably not in a good ending either, so.
No. Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, sorry.
No.
My whole thing was when he was coming in to bring her food, I was just thinking about all these weird social constructs we have that keep us from doing things. Like I guess this is a super tangent, but my girlfriend has a cat and a dog. And just the amount of nonsense a dog will put up with so it can go to bed to the bathroom outside. But sort of tangential to that is Alex sitting there going, oh, I don't want to go inside and disturb you when I have this food, but she's lying there bleeding out.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you got to get in there, right? He doesn't know that. So he's kind of doing this weird little dance that we all do, but is really counterproductive. You know what I mean? So I just found that interesting.
Oh, yeah. The way Cass Enver plays that scene, he like, the door opens and he's still like, looking away as if, like, maybe she's changing or, like...
Yeah, she could be asleep or,
asleep,
you know,
in,
whatever,
like, her underwear. Like, and it's just like, dude, no!
But how's he supposed to know that? And I would do the exact same thing if I was him. So I just find it interesting. It's like all these weird social constructs that even dogs have. I guess we train them to do it, right?
Yeah.
But still, it's like a dog is like, well, I can't go to the bathroom inside. I'm not a freak. What the hell?
I was just like, no, she go in, but it totally
get the hell in
sense.
There. Put the food down and get to work.
Yeah, she's beyond soup or whatever you were gonna bring
exactly.
Her.
And also, is this stuff any good? I get the feeling that it's like tolerable, and they're on a ship, and so they'll take it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, his cooking is mildly better than Naomi's, so.
Yeah. I'm also endlessly fascinated by that wheel of plants. Well, you're a botanist. You'd be more fascinated than I would. But what is the deal with that wheel of plants they have in the kitchen?
I know. I don't know. I was actually reading recently, this is a tangent, but I was reading an article about there's a science station in our Antarctica that is like one of the most remote science stations that's just trying to figure out how to grow food in space. It's... Mm-hmm.
The Martian lied to us. Potato growing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I want to read more about that place because it's their wall of plants is, I feel like, maybe only doing a little bit to add to their you know, it's like a house plant. It's like a house plant
being brought in by ship. Yeah, I guess probably.
You know,
because they never pluck from it. Maybe it's like herbs for like the lasagna or something.
Exactly.
I don't know how I got off on this tangent. It just draws the eye whenever you see it because it's a really gray, drab area and they got this big white background and the green stuff. So you're like, why wouldn't you look at that?
Yeah. Interestingly enough, the first vegetable they grew in space, which I know because, you know, this is what I'm a science fiction nerd and a farmer, is a red lettuce because it grows better in low light conditions if it's a red lettuce versus a green lettuce.
I have no idea.
So these are the, you know, types
of
things.
How surreal would that be to pluck something you grew in space and then eat it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I actually, I listened to an interview with the guy who's a lettuce breeder because those are the kind of podcasts I listen to sometimes. And he was like, he literally didn't he like found out after NASA had grown his breed of lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's like a hippie from the Pacific Northwest, you know, like, and he was like, yeah, apparently my lettuce is good for, you know, surviving harsh winters and space.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Bring it up here. It's harsh winter up in Canada. Not right. Not right now.
Yeah.
It's 2 degrees Celsius, whatever that is, Fahrenheit.
And oh.
That's for the rest of Canada. That's a joke. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's been very mild here. I don't even know. I was like actually doing work outside today.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I couldn't sit and stare at my spreadsheets of planting dates anymore. But
no.
I don't know. Now that we're talking about my spreadsheets, maybe that means it's time to,
I think it is probably time. We have really gone off topic in this. I'm both proud of it and apologizing to Katie and Chip for this.
Yes. Sorry, guys.
But I'm not that sorry, honestly.
No. This is what happens when you guys are off doing other things. I don't know. Someone's going to be excited about space lettuce and our rant about basic income, I hope.
I'm sure.
All right. So until next time, please follow us at Legit Salvage on Twitter and find us on the Incomparable Network and wherever good podcasts are found. Thanks so much for joining us on A Legitimate Salvage. We'll be back to discuss Season 4, Episode 6, Displacement. Until then...
This planet is not what you think it is.